Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
The Major Spoilers Podcast is sponsored in part by the Mid-Ohio Con, October 3rd and 4th in Columbus, Ohio. For more information, visit MidOhioCon.com. The show is also sponsored in part by Past Generation Toys. Past Generation Toys has a large selection of Star Wars, G.I. Joe, and Marvel toys. Visit them on the web at PastGenerationToys.com.
All right, so I've been watching this... TV show called Legend of the Seeker.
Oh, yeah. You know, I was going to ask you about that because you've been posting it up on your Twitter for the last couple of days. Oh, I'm going to sit down and watch Legend of the Seeker on the Netflix. Hey, you kids, this is a pretty good show, this Legend of the Seeker. What is it about? I see it on Universal HD all the time, and I flip through it, and it looks like it's some Dungeons & Dragons thing.
It's based on a series of books called The Sword of Truth by Terry Goodkind, I think is the name.
Oh, yeah, he's the guy that did... what did he do, Matthew? He did...
Wizard for Who's School.
That? Is that who it is? Mm-hmm. David Goodkind?
Terry.
Terry Goodkind.
But, so I started watching it, and it was pretty formulaic fantasy. You know, there's a young man with a destiny, he's a chosen one, he's got a magic sword, and there's a wizard kicking around with him.
Right.
Pretty straightforward stuff.
Yes.
The first part where it really deviates from standard fantasy is the confessors, which are this order of women who basically... are supposed to uphold truth and justice and stuff, and they do it by basically when somebody steps out of line hard enough, they basically grab him by the neck and turn him into their love slave.
All right.
It's pretty intense, and like all the little ramifications of it, like it's basically him, his wizard, and the confessor walking, kicking around, and most of the good stories revolve around the confessor's power, and... you know, whether she's going to turn somebody into a love zombie or not.
Really?
Halfway through the show.
The series or just one
Halfway
show?
Through the series.
Okay. Is this series one, season one that
this
you're
is
watching?
Season one. Season two has been approved, but it might be in production, but I don't think it's come out yet.
Okay.
A cabal of magic dominatrices. Dominatrixes?
I'm liking what you're saying so far.
With who's, like, magic... power focus is essentially a dildo. Show up. And somebody had told me about this show. They're like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then, like, halfway through, this, like, weird group of, like, dominatrices with magic dildos show up. And I was like, okay, well, this is probably where the show goes downhill. I mean, right, this is, like, just some weird sexual thing. That show is... The show where they show up is that turning point for the series. It's the show where you're like, oh, holy crap, this thing, you know, this is serious. Like, it was actually good. Like,
magic
it was
dildos?
One. Yes. Basically, it's like rods. It's like.
Oh, okay.
And what they do is, like, they, like, touch it with them and you feel very intense pain.
Okay.
Is what it is. But they're phallic, you know? And they're dressed like dominatrixes. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're not strap ons. They don't have them on.
Right. This sounds an awful lot like. Do you remember the Mortal Kombat, the television series?
I never did watch that.
See if you can find that. It sounds vaguely. It sounds vaguely much. Like that,
yeah.
Of course, Mortal Kombat ended with what's his name getting killed, and the head guy taking over. So the season one is worth a watch.
Is it?
I don't know. Is it
of Legend of the Seeker? Yeah, definitely. And if you have Netflix, it's on there for free right now. And I don't think the season one DVD is actually even out.
Oh, really?
It might be, but this might be your first chance to like sit down and take in the whole series. And I'm liking it. I'm probably 5 episodes away from the final episode.
Okay.
And so far it's great. The chick that plays the confessor is my new super favorite thing in the universe, I think.
Turns into a love zombie, huh?
She did. She can.
What's the point of the show, though, besides love zombies and women with magic dildos?
The point of the show is there's this
every generation.
Every generation. I'm serious. It's so cliche. It is so cliche. Every generation, there's some great evil, whatever the evil is.
Right.
And a seeker is born, and the seeker's job is to vanquish the evil and kind of return things to the way they should be. And then eventually the seeker dies, evil comes back, and another seeker is born.
Every generation, a great evil arises across the land.
There can be only one!
Exactly, exactly. It is, and when I started watching it, I was like, oh, good God, are you serious? A prophecy, a baby taken away from his mother as every firstborn son is slaughtered? Are you serious? I mean, you know who did this first? The Bible. This is how old this story is.
Apparently it takes place before the Bible, right?
But the important thing is the character interactions. Basically, what The Legend of the Seeker is a show about a boy and a girl.
How old is this boy?
They're in their 20s.
Okay.
It's about a young man and a young woman who can't have sex, even though they want to.
Why not?
Because the confessor, like her power to turn people into love zombies, it's always on.
Oh,
and she has to control it.
Ah.
If she ever, loses control of it while she's touching somebody, that person becomes a love zombie.
Ah.
So if they were, say, doing it and she climaxed, she would lose control of it. Then the seeker, who's, the guy, would get turned into a love zombie and thus be a total crap as a seeker because he would just, lose all his will.
So then what happens from episode to episode? What are they seeking?
They are basically running around the countryside, helping peasants and gathering a rebellion so that they can go fight the big bad guy.
Oh, okay. All right. There's no, dragons and
there are all kinds.
Warlocks
there are, big scary gargoyle monsters. There's a sorceress who's kind of playing both sides. You get to meet, other kind of people with weird titles, like The Listener, which is funny because I'm pretty sure that
the Seeker, The Listener, The Confessor.
Exactly, stuff like that.
The Toll Booth Man.
Yeah. The,
Occupations.
Yes. And The Listener is basically a guy who can read your mind. And, the thing is,
The Talker, they have one of those yet?
Yeah, they do. And they always try to get away from him, but he always finds them. And Sam Raimi's brother, who is always in every Sam Raimi production, is just in one episode, and he plays this guy who's like a cartographomancer or something like that. Like, he's a magic map maker.
Magic map maker.
Yeah, so, that whole episode revolves around magic maps, and it's just, it's like this cool little thing.
I may have to give the first episode a look-see.
Mm-hmm. The first two episodes are kind of exposition heavy, but that's always how it goes.
I don't know why I've turned it off, because I've seen it on, Universal HD,
and I'll
watch a couple minutes of it, maybe because I've got the two-year-old screaming, I want to watch Naughty!
I know, I've seen it, I know, and I remember as I was watching this, I would catch glimpses and I was like, I've actually seen this show before, and I turned it away because it looks like... Well, basically, it looks like Hercules and Xena.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's the same people doing it. It's a little bit more higher budget, and they play it totally straight. It's not like tongue-in-cheek like Hercules and Xena was a lot of the time.
Well, Hercules, when it first started off, was straight.
Yeah, it was straight up, but,
So was Xena.
Right.
You may not have been alive back then.
I was...
Back in the 80s.
I was, yeah. No, this was not back in the 80s. They came out in the 90s.
No. Hercules and Xena came out on, 87, 88.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I'm gonna IMDb that.
All right, IMDb that shit. Because I was pretty sure that they came out in the 90s.
It was all part of this thing when the... What network was it, Matthew, that had the action pack? And it was a series of movies.
It was syndicated.
Yeah, it was a series of syndicated movies. And I'm almost certain it came out because I remember watching it at my parents' house. Let's see, Hercules.
The Legendary Journeys, if you want to get a meaningful... result.
Well, my spelling is not.
Yeah, your spelling is for crap.
It says 1995.
1995 to 1999.
See?
Loosely based on the tales of the classical Greek hero Heracles.
I could have swore that was before 1995.
I was already.
That came out while we were in college.
Really?
I was already in the United States Pretty
I could
sure.
have swore Action Pack was when that debuted, and I could have swore that was before 1995, because
it was
one
like
of the other
Hercules,
movies in the Action Pack was
Vanishing Sun.
Vanishing Sun and Midnight Run. And my friend from high school was working on that.
Cool.
So, boy, my mind goes.
Anyway, yeah, Legend of the Seeker. Not totally, still totally cliche as far as, like, if you want brand new, totally novel fantasy concepts, not there. The setting is basically just there so you can watch an old man, a cool guy, and a sexy girl have adventures and interact together and have, you know, basically watching the character interaction between these three people.
Bridget Regan.
Yes, that is her.
Oh!
She was in an episode of Love Monkey as Woman.
What is Love Monkey?
Oh, it was that show. You know the guy from Ed? He had another show.
Oh,
briefly.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that.
And I just know this because earlier today I IMDb'd her.
Meh.
I should find her on Twitter. I would follow her on Twitter.
I'm sure she's got a Twitter page. I'm just sure do Bridget Regan Twitter.
Bum, bum.
You're listening to us. Help Rodrigo stalk. BMTCR. BMTCR. Can you remember that?
DTMFA?
BMTCR?
BMTCR.
Well, but there's like five of them here.
Oh, no.
There's two of them that have good pictures. One, BMTCR.
Has nothing.
Has no picture.
Yeah.
Art Swamy. That's a different.
Hey, did I talk about Bridget Regan before on the Major Spoiler site?
Maybe.
When she was maybe up for a Wonder Woman role?
Maybe.
Let's look, because if I did, there may be some pictures up there, Rodrigo.
Ho ho.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Bloodlust.
All right. Man, we're almost 40 minutes into...
Yeah, you guys have been talking for like 10 minutes about this Super Dildo show, and I've been done.
Well, we've got stuff for Saturday, then.
Super Dildo!
Super Dildo! Look, Super Dildo show was never made it to the United States.
All the world All right, is keep, waiting for you!
I keep trying to find the DVDs, but Super Dildo show does not... is all about regional coding, and you know you can't get it. Super Dildo Show Action Team.
You know what I missed last week? I want to change the topic off Legend of the Seeker for just a moment.
Sure.
You know what I missed last week? I missed the fact that Buckaroo Banzai hit 25 years.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That makes you old.
Came out, what, 1986 or something?
That would have been 84.
84.
Wait, no.
Yeah, 84 would be 25.
No, 84. Yep, 84.
What? It came out.
Saying as I'm 26, and I was born in 83.
It's 2009.
So 82, right? Okay.
84.
Right. Exactly. What is it about Buckaroo Banzai that's so great? We just spent, you know, a couple of after the show discussions talking about why the black hole is so great.
Because it is.
Why is Buckaroo Banzai so great? I'll tell you why it's great.
John Lithgow.
John Warfen. You know what makes
Yancy
Buckaroo...
Butler.
That's pretty good too, Rawhide. No. Yancy Butler, right? Rawhide? Yeah. No. Which part was Yancy Butler?
Pretty sure it was Reno.
Oh, Reno, that's right. I like the fact that there are just so many big-name stars today that we know. Of course, Peter Weller... went on to play RoboCop. That was his probably big role.
Mm-hmm.
John Lithgow. What's his name?
The Fly.
Yes, The Fly was in that as well. You had Penny Pretty. You had Christopher Lloyd.
Not Yancy Butler. Clancy Brown.
Clancy Brown. That's who was Rawhide.
That's who we're talking about.
Who else was in that movie that went on that are big names that people would recognize today? John,
the Don't Worry, Be Happy guy.
What?
Bobby McFerrin?
Bobby McFerrin was not in that
movie. Yeah, he was one of the Black Electroids, wasn't he?
I don't know. Ellen Barkin was in it, Jeff Goldblum, Christopher Lloyd, Lewis Smith, Robert Ito.
When they're doing the badass power walk through the LA River at the end, isn't he like right there in the front?
Who played that guy? No, that's like Bobby McFerrin. Rosalind Cash played John M. Dahl. I don't think it was Bobby McFerrin. What makes Buckaroo Banzai great is that freaking end song and that walk that they do through the LA River Basin.
And I am so stoked for Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime Syndicate. Man, when is that coming out again?
Coming soon. I love that movie so much. I remember my dad he worked up in Kansas City, would stop and pick up movies at the rental store because we didn't have one really nearby.
And never bring them back.
And he came one day home, and it was the summertime, and he said, here, check out this Buckaroo Banzai thing. And I was like, what is this? And it's like, are you sure? Can I watch a movie? Because he was not really big on me sitting down and just watching movies in the middle of the summer, especially when there's work to be done.
Yep.
There's lawns needing to be mowed. There's cows that need to be milked. Horses need to be ridden. And he's like, yeah, sure, just go ahead, check it out. And I remember sitting down and watching this and going, oh my freaking God. This is the greatest adventure movie of all time. That Dot Savage movie that was on Channel 5 a few weeks ago, that was good. But Buckaroo Banzai rocks my world.
Nice.
Because it's got everything. It's got space, mm-hmm. you know, space aliens. It's got interdimensional travel. It's got science. It's got rock and roll. It's got a team of people. It's got fighting. It's got references to War of the Worlds in it.
It's got electroids of two different colors.
Red and black.
That's right.
And... you know, just throw them all together in a blender and see what the hell comes out. And you don't really know what's going on at times because this whole Penny Pretty thing with Buckaroo's previous wife, you're like, what's going on with that? You never learn about some of these things. You never learn why there's a watermelon there. Mm-hmm. You never learn, you know, what
happens. I know why there's a watermelon there.
Well, actually, the reason why there's a watermelon is they were testing to see if they could drop watermelons into starving countries without the watermelons breaking open, yet still making them easy to break open and eat after they'd been dropped. That's why there was a watermelon there. The whole Banzai complex is like awesome. You know, when Dr. Hikito goes down into the air ducts and goes down into another part of the lab, it's cool. You had all these great characters like Rawhide and Perfect Tommy and Reno and what did they call Jeff Goldblum? New Jersey. You got all these characters called John.
Yep.
Man, that's just like, what is there not to love about that show? What about there's there not to love about that movie? Except the fact that there was no World Crime League follow-up.
Yep.
Well, and that's half the fun. I mean, it feels like an artifact of a huge ongoing world, a huge, right. You know, overarching mythology. And this is all you know, and you kind of have to piece the rest of it together.
The fact that there were the Blue Blazer regulars, these people that were like fans of Buckaroo Banzai who were like mercenaries at the same time.
That always really reminded me of The Shadow.
Yes.
Like how The Shadow essentially helps people and kind of basically tells them, and now you have to be my little friend, and when I come asking for help, you help me, okay?
Yeah, and that's just like so crazy cool, mm-hmm. especially when it's just like Buckaroo's running from the truck with electroids behind it, and they're gonna run him over, and all of a sudden this ladder drops down and he grabs it and he's riding up and he doesn't care just as long as he's not run over by the electroids, and all of a sudden this little kid is like, hey, this is Scooter Libby and don't worry, we got you, Buckaroo. This is VHS, so the audio quality wasn't great. So this is Scooter Libby and you're with the Blue Blazer regular number 33 and a half. Hang on, Buckaroo, we got you.
Nice.
And then they fly off to the compound. The whole fact that Buckaroo is this, you know, they've got groupies that hang out in front of a science compound.
Yep.
And, you know,
he is a scientist rock star.
And they rock, too. That end song, this is a nerdy I was. This is before CDs. This is before digital. I'd actually set a recorder, an audio cassette recorder, up to the speaker of the television and played that end credit. And would listen to that nonstop.
Steven's first pirate dub.
Yes, it was. What did you like about Buckaroo, Matthew, or do you not care for Buckaroo Banzai?
Oh, I'm a fan of Buckaroo Banzai. I'm not like a Steven fan.
Man, Pinky Carruthers, Miss Johnson, Billy Travers.
All right.
How could you not love that stuff, John? John Yaya. And your name? John Smallberry.
Smallberries.
How can you not love Buckaroo Banzai?
You did ask him a question, though, before that, right?
I did.
I like it simply because of, for some reason, the concept of the main character, who's a rock star and also a superhero and also a super scientist, mm-hmm. just cracks me up. And the characterizations are so entertaining. Why do I have to do it? Because you're perfect.
Yeah. Well, you got me
you
there.
You know, just the whole setup of it, it's like ready-made for fan fiction.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. And there's just, you know, tons of places where you can hook in and go, this is my favorite part. And then, you know, hey, it's kind of like the Legion of Superheroes in that. Not like the X-Men because they suck. But
that's it. I've had it.
You know, there's all sorts of entertaining things. It's very much a product of its times. Now, granted, my introduction to the Buckaroo Banzai came from a couple of comic books that I bought from S&S Drug.
Yes.
Way back in the day.
Was it the movie adaptation ones?
Yeah, the comic book adaptations.
I remember picking those up years later, too, and just going, oh, this is pretty awesome.
Yeah, they're interesting. But there's something about the comic books that made them a little more awesome. In that they were written by Bill Mantlo. And Bill Mantlo had a tendency to just kind of stick stuff on there. Bill Mantlo managed to make ROM, which was a tie-in to a comic book or to a toy that lasted a year, made that comic book last for 10. But there's so many different things that you can hook into. I know my friend Bruce, also known as Otter Disaster, his wife loves Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh, yeah. And, well, it was Bruce that triggered me to remind me that it was the 25th anniversary.
Yep. They are huge, enormous, giant fans, almost nerdy fans, to the point where I go, really? Dude, you're getting a little nerdy here. But you know what I'm saying? I think you know. But I like the fact that it creates this enormous mythology and doesn't tell you about it and allows you to, you know, kind of fill in the blanks. And I love the fact that if you actually read the comics from Moonstone, the continuations of the story,
the return of the screw, they
don't tell you nothing either.
Well, the interesting thing is the Return of the Screw kind of retells the movie again. Which doesn't make a lot of sense because it's like the same trappings where the girl is tied up and honey's being poured on her and ants and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But then the series that came after that featured like a story about Buckaroo when he was a kid and how he, you know, got some of his money and that kind of stuff, which was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it seems like that's such a perfect opportunity for people to latch onto this and really do some really kick-ass stuff. Mm-hmm. Here's some interesting trivia. D.W. Richter and writer Earl MacRoush, they met at Dartmouth College. And Richter had read a review of a book that MacRoush had written called Arkansas Adios and contacted him saying, hey, I'd like to adapt this into a film. And then they began corresponding and what turned into Buckaroo Banzai. And I did not know that. That's kind of interesting. You can read more about that up on wikipedia.org.
A perfectly reputable place.
The film was given mixed reviews. Currently, it has a 71% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
David, that's still 71% fresh.
Yes, it is.
That's actually pretty good for a
movie that's 25 years old.
Well, and I wonder if it wasn't that it's been re-reviewed and people going, hey, you know, this was actually pretty good.
Dave Kerr over at the Chicago Reader wrote, Richter seems to have invented an elaborate mythology for his hero, but he never bothers to explain it. The film gives you the mildly annoying sensation of being left out of a not very good private joke, which it kind of does. I mean, what's going on with, you know, what's going on with all of these people and how do they get their crazy Western names? Mm-hmm. You know, the Hong Kong Cavaliers. What's going on with this jet car and I don't know if any of you guys did, but I kind of tried to, in my mind, lay out how the Banzai compound worked. Mm-hmm. Where is the garage in relation to this? There's this whole sequence where Dr. What is his name? Hikiro and Penny are trying to escape with the oscillation overthruster, and they're just going through door after door after door and sub-level and up and down until finally they get to, you know, one place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, how big is this place? I don't know. Did you know, Matthew?
I know
that,
what?
There was a scene.
I know, Matthew.
That's good. There was a scene that was edited out. There was actually
with
at the very
Jamie
beginning.
Lee Curtis?
Yeah, I didn't know if you knew that Jamie Lee Curtis was to play or yep. played Buckaroo Banzai's mom. And I don't remember if this has been put in the re-release edition. I don't know if it's in Blu-ray or what it is.
It's in the DVD that I saw.
Okay. I think I've seen it too. I don't remember if I sat down and watched those.
Where it's like a newsreel.
Scenes. Well, it's actually showing, it tells what happened to Buckaroo's mother and father, mm-hmm. where in the opening credit roll, it talks about how they were both killed testing the oscillation overthruster.
Mm-hmm.
And that plays a big part in the story and what drove Banzai to become what he became. And it was Jamie Lee Curtis playing his mom, which I thought was pretty cool.
Who played his dad?
James Salito Asalto.
Hmm.
S-A-I...
Did he play anything else?
S-A-I-T-O.
Saito.
Saito.
Well, you might have remembered him from most recently as Dr. Frank Chin and Eli Stone. He's been Chu in the unit. He's in Heroes and Villains, Ghost of the Heartland, I Think I Love My Wife, that funny, funny comedy, currently playing nonstop on Cinemax. Let's see if there's anything else. He's been on... Rodrigo may recognize him from Law & Order Criminal Intent.
Doink, doink.
As Mr. Miyazaki from an episode from 2004.
Yeah, that seems likely.
You
remember the one where the guy was a killer?
He was in the Thomas Crown Affair. He was in Home Alone 3. He was in The Devil's Advocate.
Oh, he's been in all these awesome movies that I haven't seen.
He's been in Die Hard with a Vengeance. He was in Star Trek Voyager in one episode.
Everybody was in Star Trek Voyager, but they all had spoons glued to their face.
So he was in Teenage Mutant. Oh, he played Shredder. In Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That's where I know him from. Orokosaki.
Orokosaki.
Yep, so there you go. Very cool. Very cool stuff. Wait, was he... I gotta scroll down more, because now I'm thinking, was he also in one of the greatest other movies of all time?
Greatest other.
No, I don't think so. I thought maybe he was also in Big Trouble in Little China as one of the Thunders.
Why would he do that?
Well, he looks like the guy that inflates
himself. The
really
himself. Big buff guy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bouncing Boy?
Yes, Bouncing Boy, because, you know, X-Men suck, apparently, according
they
to
do.
According to Matthew. I'm just repeating hearsay. So, you know, 25 years of Buckaroo Banzai, it's still a film that up until about 2 years ago, I would dust off once a year and watch and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then my wife said, oh, God, again with the Buckaroo Banzai?
You were like, woman, it's been a year.
It's been a year, woman. It's September 3rd. It's my birthday. We're watching Buckaroo Banzai, Army of Darkness, and Big Trouble in Little China, damn it. That's my trio of movies.
The three movies that you want to watch on your birthday?
Yes, it is. It's my...
See,
it's
what
my
would my three movies be on my birthday? Rodrigo, what three movies would you watch on your birthday?
Just your little... These are my pleasures for myself. It's my birthday. I should do whatever
probably,
I want to do.
I don't want to see you watching movies and pleasuring yourself.
I'd probably go with Princess Mononoke, An American Werewolf in London... And then I'd probably, like, rotate one around.
No, same movies every
same
year.
Same movies every
gotta
year.
Gotta be the same. You gotta pick three.
All right. Definitely Princess Mononoke, American Werewolf in London, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
See, you always say Bogus Journey.
Bogus
God,
Journey.
The first one is the best.
Okay, look. Excellent Adventure. Like, if you want, if you watch Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, that's great. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Went to the theater to see that.
Sure. It's like watching Samurai Jack or like watching anything else, anything that has a beginning and an end, and it makes sense, and
right,
it's fun.
Right.
Bogus Journey is like trippy. Watching an episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force. It is, it is absolutely 100% absurd. Everything that happens, it's like there is an action and there is a reaction,
right?
But they don't make sense to each other. It's like I can tell that in order to defeat these evil robot versions of themselves, like they could have just like made something that shorted them out, right? Yes. No, wrong. They had to build good robot versions of themselves.
The good robot us.
God gave rock and roll to you.
You killed us, you evil metal dickweed.
Okay, Matthew, you threw it out. Now, what are your threes?
Well, I'm going to have to go with the Monkees movie, Head.
Right.
From 1968.
Right.
Probably The Black Hole.
Yes.
Because I've been missing that movie greatly lately, and I cannot find it. If anybody has a copy that you want to mail, you can send it to us care of Stately Spoilers Manor.
Yeah, just send it to that. They'll find it.
And probably Heavy Metal.
That was the one that I was going to call out, was that you wanted to see Heavy Metal.
Well, I mean, it was a real transformative movie for me.
Do you have a?
It was a point in my life when I was looking for something that I could create a new personality from, and it had violence and boobies, and I thought that will work.
Amazon.com, The Black Hole, 1979, starring Ernest Borgnine and Joseph Bottoms, $9.99 on DVD.
Hook me up. Send it to the house.
All right. The other reason that I like Buckaroo Banzai is because D.W. Richter. Also the producer of, wait a minute, also the writer of Big Trouble in Little China.
Mm-hmm.
Another awesome movie which we should probably talk about.
Which again, theoretically may possibly have been based on the sequel to Buckaroo Banzai.
We talked about that already.
Yes. At some point, listeners, you're going to have to go back into the archives. I don't know. I think that must have been a bonus episode somewhere.
I think
it may not even be in the show notes.
I believe it started in one podcast and wasn't answered until the next podcast. Because
right.
I referenced it briefly and then you actually looked it up
and had
an answer.
Yes, I did. Let me look that up. Buckaroo Banzai.
So I believe the Buckaroo Banzai podcast is in the late 50s, early 60s.
I don't think it's that. Let's see.
Why are you singing Kisses, though?
Here we go. MSP number 65.
That is actually a song by a band named Argent, and they play a Kiss cover in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Is that what it is? MSP number 65.
Why are you singing it in the voice of Gizmo from the Gremlins?
Gremlins is another great movie that I would probably watch on my birthday if not for...
Gremlins 2.
Gremlins
so we're
2 is also
into
pretty good.
Reruns.
Better movie.
We're already into reruns of topics.
See, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying 65. Is, you know, you can have a sequel that is, you know, superior
to the first
one. We talked
about Buckaroo Banzai.
And
Doctor
I like...
Who's Daughter and webcomics.
Yeah, I like... Excellent Adventure, just fine. I love it. It's a great movie. But Bogus Journey, totally nuts.
Dun, dun.
In a great way. You know what's another totally nuts movie? Freaked. Also starring the guy. Also starring
that
Bill
movie
and Ted.
Gave me nightmares.
That also starring the same guys as Bill and Ted, but Keanu Reeves wanted to not be credited for it.
Yeah. The point where they take Christy Swanson and what's his face and
the brother
Bill,
from Blossom,
and they like take them and merge them together into one person. Oh, that's creepy. I have a thing about mutilation though that just freaks me right the hell out.
Yep.
So that movie just totally tweaks my melon. You know what else is should not be a scary movie but terrifies me?
Which one?
Nothing But Trouble. That Dan Aykroyd movie. From like 1988. It's got like Chevy Chase and Demi Moore.
No, Chevy Chase.
But it's got a sequence at the beginning where these travelers show up and end up, you know, trapped on this roller coaster and thrown out of the roller coaster into basically a chipper shredder. And then you see their stripped skeletons crash up against the wall into a pile.
What was that one called again?
Nothing But Trouble, I believe. It's a John Candy film, primarily, is the way it was marketed.
Wait, tell me the premise again. This isn't the junkyard one?
What?
This isn't the one where they go off course and they get lost and they end up in a junkyard, crazy town?
I believe so, yeah.
Really? Okay. Yeah, it did have Demi Moore in it, yeah.
Demi Moore, and it's got like John Candy and Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase in it. It's
from
like 1991.
Dan Aykroyd plays the judge or something, and Chevy Chase is dating.
Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy's this movie, I think.
Yeah, a couple of
Dan
roles.
Dan has like five roles.
Yeah, and Chevy Chase and Demi Moore are married or in the process of being in love or whatever.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, especially in 1991.
Then again, she was in Master Ninja, so.
Master Ninja theme song!
All right, everybody, I think we probably ought to end it there. Thank you so much for listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, where we ramble about whatever, apparently. Head over to the MajorSpoilers.com website. A whole bunch of other good stuff. We'll see you next time when we talk about Zorro.
If you have any questions, comments, topic ideas for future shows, or would like to sponsor a show, send an email to podcast@MajorSpoilers.com. Visit MajorSpoilers@MajorSpoilers.com and be sure to check out the Major Spoilers Forum. You can also follow Major Spoilers on Twitter at twitter.com/majorspoilers and on MySpace at myspace.com/majorspoilers.
Fat the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic bookstore guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. And think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven rich like a man of iron, I might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun me in the Middle East with a gang sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
Major Spoilers Podcast, copyright 2009.